The Tree Lover by Ruskin Bond is an audiobook published by Puffin Books, an imprint of Penguin Random House India. And the story is now being read by the author. Chapter 1. I was never able to get over the feeling that plants and trees loved Grandfather with as much tenderness as he loved them. I was sitting beside him on the veranda steps one morning when I noticed the tendril of a creeping vine that was trailing near my feet. As we sat there in the soft sunshine of a North Indian winter, I saw that the tendril was moving very slowly away from me and towards Grandfather. 20 minutes later, it had crossed the veranda step and was touching Grandfather's feet. There is probably a scientific explanation for the plant's behavior, something to do with light and warmth, but I like to think that it moved that way simply because it was fond of Grandfather. One felt like drawing close to him. Sometimes, when I sat alone beneath a tree, I would feel a little lonely or lost. But as soon as Grandfather joined me, the garden would become a happy place, the tree itself more friendly. Chapter 2. Grandfather had served many years in the Indian Forest Service, and so it was natural that he should know and understand and like trees. On his retirement from the service, he had built a bungalow on the outskirts of Dera, planting trees all round it. Limes, mangoes, oranges, and guavas, also eucalyptus, jacaranda, and the Persian lilac. In the fertile Dune Valley, plants and trees grew tall and strong. There were other trees in the compound before the house was built, including an old peepal which had forced its way through the walls of an abandoned outhouse, knocking the bricks down with its vigorous growth. Peepal trees are great show-offs. Even when there is no breeze, their broad-chested, slim-waisted leaves will spin like tops, determined to attract your attention and invite you into the shade. Grandmother had wanted the peepal cut down, but Grandfather had said, "Let it be, we can always build another outhouse." The gardener, Dukhi, who was a Hindu, was pleased that we had allowed the tree to live. Peepal trees are sacred to Hindus, and some people believe that ghosts live in the branches. "If we cut the tree down, wouldn't the ghosts go away?" I asked. "I don't know," said Grandfather. "Perhaps they'd come into the house." Dukhi wouldn't walk under the tree at night. He said that once, when he was young, he had wandered beneath a peepal tree late at night, and that something heavy had fallen with a thud on his shoulders. Since then, he had always walked with a slight stoop, he explained. "Nonsense," said Grandmother, who didn't believe in ghosts. "He got his stoop from squatting on his haunches year after year, weeding that tiny spade of his. I never saw any ghosts in our peepal tree." There are peepal trees all over India, and people sometimes leave offerings of milk and flowers beneath them to keep the spirits happy. But since no one left any offerings under our tree, I expect the ghosts left in disgust to look for peepal trees where there was both board and lodging. Grandfather was about 60, a lean, active man who still rode his bicycle at great speed. He had stopped climbing trees only a year ago, when he had got to the top of the jackfruit tree and had been unable to come down again. We had to fetch a ladder for him. Grandfather bathed quite often, but got back into his gardening clothes immediately after the bath, and during meals, ladybirds or caterpillars would sometimes walk off his shirt sleeves and wander about on the tablecloth, and this always annoyed Grandmother. She grumbled at Grandfather a lot, but he didn't mind, because he knew she loved him. My favorite tree was the banyan which grew behind the house. Its spreading branches, which hung to the ground and took root again, formed a number of twisting passageways. The tree was older than the house, older than my grandparents. I could hide in its branches, behind a screen of thick green leaves, and spy on the world below. The banyan tree was a world in itself, populated with small animals and large insects. While the leaves were still pink and tender, they would be visited by the delicate map butterfly, who left her eggs in their care. The honey on the leaves, a sweet, sticky smear, also attracted the little striped squirrels, who soon grew used to having me in the tree and became quite bold, accepting gram from my hand. At night the tree was visited by the hawk cuckoo. Its shrill, nagging cry kept us awake on hot summer nights. Indians called the bird Peosala, which means rain is coming. But according to grandfather, when the bird was in full cry, it seemed to be shouting, "Oh dear, oh dear, how very hot it's getting. We feel it, we feel it, we feel it." Chapter 3. Grandfather wasn't content with planting trees in our garden. During the rains, we would walk into the jungle beyond the riverbed, armed with cuttings and saplings, and these we would plant in the forest, beside the tall sal and shisham trees. "But no one comes here," I protested, the first time we did this. "Who's going to see them?" "We are not planting for people only," said Grandfather. "We are planting for the forest, and for the birds and animals who live here, and need more food and shelter." He told me how men, and not only birds and animals, needed trees, for keeping the desert away, for attracting rain, for preventing the banks of rivers from being washed away, and for wild plants and grasses to grow beneath. "And for timber?" I asked, pointing to the sal and shisham trees. "Yes, and for timber. But men are cutting down the trees without replacing them. For every tree that's felled, we must plant two. Otherwise, one day, there'll be no forests at all, and the world will become one great desert." The thought of a world without trees became a sort of nightmare for me. It's one reason why I shall never want to live on the treeless moon, and I helped Grandfather in his tree planting with even greater enthusiasm. He taught me a poem by George Morris, and we would recite it together. "Woodman, spare that tree, touch not a single bough. In youth it sheltered me, and I'll protect it now. One day the trees will move again," said Grandfather. "They've been standing still for thousands of years, but one day they'll move again. There was a time when trees could walk about like people, but along came the devil and cast a spell over them, rooting them to one place. But they're always trying to move. See how they reach out with their arms, and some of them, like the banyan tree with its travelling roots, manage to get quite far." In the autumn, Grandfather took me to the hills, the devdars or Indian cedars. Oaks, chestnuts, and maples were very different from the trees I had grown up with in Dera. The broad leaves of the horse chestnut had turned yellow, and smooth brown chestnuts lay scattered on the roads. Grandfather and I filled our pockets with them, then climbed the slope of a bare hill and started planting the chestnuts in the ground. I don't know if they ever came up, because I never went there again. Goats and cattle grazed freely on the hill, and if the trees did come up in the spring, they may well have been eaten. But I like to think that somewhere in the foothills of the Himalayas there is a grove of chestnut trees, and that birds and flying foxes and cicadas have made their homes in them. Chapter 4. Back in Dera, we found an island, a small rocky island in the middle of a dry riverbed. It was one of those riverbeds so common in the Doon Valley, which are completely dry in summer, but flooded during the monsoon rains. A small mango tree was growing in the middle of the island, and Grandfather said, "If a mango can grow here, so can other trees." As soon as the rain set in, and while the river could still be crossed, we set out with a number of tamarind, laburnum, and caudal tree saplings and cuttings, and spent the day planting them on the island. When the monsoon set in, the trees appeared to be flourishing.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?